Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Homes.com knows that when it comes to home shopping, it's never just about the house or condo. It's about the home. And what makes a home is more than just the house or property. It's the location and neighborhood. If you have kids, it's also schools, nearby parks, and transportation options. That's why Homes.com goes above and beyond to bring home shoppers the in-depth information they need to find the right home. And when I say in-depth, I'm talking deep. Each listing features comprehensive information about the neighborhood, complete with a video guide. They also have details about local schools with test scores, state rankings, and student-to-teacher ratio. They even have an agent directory with the sales history of each agent. So when it comes to finding a home, not just a house, this is everything you need to know, all in one place. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
My mission is simple: to make you money. I'm here to level the playing field for all investors. There's always a bull market somewhere, and I promise to help you find it. Mad Money starts now.
Hey, I'm Cramer. Welcome to Mad Money. Welcome to Cramerica. If you want to make friends, I'm just trying to make you some money. My job is not just to entertain you, but to educate and teach you. So call me at 1-800-743-CNBC or tweet me at Jim Cramer. It's nail biting time, even if you don't bite your nails. Right now, we're figuring out if the recent collapse in commodity prices is because the Fed's wrenched all of the speculative excess out of the system, good, or because the world's economy is slowing so rapidly that we're headed for a terrible recession, bad. And that's the number one question with Daily Today, where the Dow dipped 62 points, S&P declined 0.30%, NASDAQ lost 0.72%. Now, I wish I could tell you the answer, but I don't think it's available yet. This morning, I had a discussion with Ken Langone, the brilliant businessman turned philanthropist. He was adamant that a bad recession would prove to be the culprit for commodities. And hey, he's got a point. The metals and plastics and wood complex are all down badly. Sure signs that industry is slowing worldwide.
How inevitable is that recession in your view? Are we in a recession right now?
Never say never. I think we are in a recession right now. I think intellectually and mentally we're in a recession right now.
Wow. Yeah, it rang with me all day. That's all I thought about. Is it true? Well, I don't know. I puzzled over it for hours. Why don't we approach this empirically before we conclude that we're unavoidably headed for a deep recession? Remember, the ideal outcome here is to get enough of a slowdown that the Fed can take up rates gradually without throwing a ton of people out of work. Every day we get clues. We just need to know how to interpret them. Today we learned, for instance, that pending home sales edged up 0.7% in May versus April. Oh, boy, that's a too-hot statistic. That means the Fed will have to tighten more aggressively. That is a Langone number. But then you look underneath the headline and you see the truth. The Northeast accelerated 15.4% month over month, smoking hot, bad. However, nationwide transactions dropped 13.6% year over year, with the largest decline in contract activity taking place in the West, where homes are way more expensive than the rest of the country. According to the National Association of Realtors, contract signings are down sizably from a year ago because of much higher mortgage rates. Now, this is where it gets really tricky. The chief economist for the National Association of Realtors, Lawrence Yoon, clearly seems alarmed by the signings number. He says, and I quote, "Trying to balance the housing market by choking off demand via higher mortgage rates is damaging to consumers and the economy. The better way to balance the market is through increased supply." Of course he's right. But the Fed can't build more houses. The home builders are trying the best they can to build as much as they can. See, I see comments like this, and it makes me think we could be looking at a rapid breakdown in sales. That's good news for the stock market, as long as it's not too rapid. My wife sells real estate for a living. She taught me that the prelude to a sudden plunge in housing prices is a dramatic drying up of contracts. That decline is what Jay Powell wants to see. He'll keep bringing that pain until it happens. He needs housing prices lower. They're up 20% over 2 years. When you put together the declining value of real estate, though, with the declining value of your 401k, well, you're going to have a weaker consumer, maybe a much weaker consumer, maybe a 2-week consumer. How about the enterprise? Today we got durable goods orders, and they were up ever so slightly, $1.9 billion or 0.7% to $267.2 billion. In a vacuum, you might think that's excellent. But we're in a good news is bad news situation where strong numbers mean the Fed needs to tighten a lot more aggressively. How about commodities? All right, now, here we got to break them down one by one. Some great news here. Soy, sugar, corn, cattle, all down. Cotton's on pace for its worst month since 1995. Wheat's having its worst month since 2015. Copper worse since 2011. That's all fantastic from an inflation perspective. We'd be worried that Russia's invasion of Ukraine would cause worldwide food shortages, even famines. And it is in some places because so many calories have been taken offline. But now it's looking a little less likely. These commodity collapses are exactly what you want to see, and they're not from the Fed. However, crude oil, which had spent most of June going lower, finally snapped back today, up more than 2%. Natural gas jumped nearly 3%, so there goes the neighborhood. When energy's running like that, it's hard to believe we can have a soft landing, isn't it? Because high gas prices put a ton of pressure on the Fed to tighten. We go back and forth and back and forth. The drug stocks rally because of a belief that the Powell will throw us into a recession. The tech stocks fall because we're beginning to get layoffs. UiPath, one of the fastest growing tech darling automating repetitive motions, laid off 5% of its global workforce today. That would be inconceivable as recently as 6 months ago. Powerboats, according to Baird, down 18% year over year in May. And then we got this cautionary article on CNBC.com about the coming Wall Street layoffs as the capital markets business is falling apart. Something you can see from the total drop in IPOs. The math is ominous, the article says. Headcount at J.P. Morgan's investment bank, Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, jumped by 13%, 70%, and 26%, respectively. You can only imagine how little some of these people have to do. Goldman Sachs has told me over and over again it can cut its table of employment swiftly and still make excellent money. I sense that maybe they have to do that. Another blow to the high-end real estate market. But then again, after the close tonight, Morgan Stanley just announced a $20 billion buyback and an 11% boost in the dividend. So how bad can things be there? And Goldman just took its quarterly dividend up from $2 to $2.50 and change. Maybe things are great. Oh, and then there was a savage report today by Goldman Sachs saying that Coinbase will have to lay off many more people than already has. They cut the price target for the thing from 70 to 45, citing Coinbase's voracious cash burn. You can extrapolate from there to the whole crypto complex, more on them later. So where do I come down on the recession that Ken Langone warned us about this morning? Let me put it this way. I am thinking what we really need. I think we need a knockout punch. I mean, just against inflation. A real roundhouse that takes us out of this on the one hand, on the other hand, landscape. It's ironic, but both Ken Langone and I said the Fed needs to hit us with a 100 basis point rate hike. For me, it's because that would take us where real estate loses value, homes become more affordable, labor market cools off enough to tamp down inflation. But Ken's talking about multiple 100 basis point hikes because he thinks we got truly runaway inflation. As I see it, the stock market may be okay given that there's a mix of good and bad data points. Given that stocks had such a big move last Friday, it felt like kind of like a consolidation day where we digest those gains. I didn't mind it. But make no mistake about it, we are not where we want to be. The fact that cranes can fall despite the Russia-Ukraine war is very strong. The fact that oil and gas are up is maddening. The bottom line, the news is precarious. It could go either way. But maybe that's what we need to see if we're going to have a soft landing, not a horrific crash landing. If all the data were strong, we'd be set up for a series of aggressive rate hikes that would wreck the economy. If all the data were weak, and it's already too late. This stuff is difficult to parse, isn't it? But it must be done, or else you're blind to what's happening out there. As I like to say at our 10:20 morning meeting for Invested Club members, you need to calculate the mosaic if you're going to invest on a 6 to 9 month basis, which is what I like to do for my charitable trust. All I can say is for a rate hike cycle, it's so far so good. Nancy in Texas, Nancy.
Yes. Hi, Jim. I want to thank you, first of all, for being such a great successor to Louis Rukeyser, because he cared about the average investor like you do, and you're great as well.
You're very kind. Thank you. You're really kind to say that. I appreciate it.
He was a great guy. My question is about Caterpillar.
Okay.
I have a great profit in it, but it has come off its high, of course, and I'm wondering if I should pare back my position or just...
I want you to buy more. I think Jim Umpleby's the man. I think they're going to be, if you take a 3 to 5 year approach to this stock, wow, is it going to be great? And that's the way you got to look at it. Don't forget 2.5% yield and a really smart CEO. Now I want to go to Todd in Texas, please. Todd.
Jimmy Chill.
The chill man is here.
Oh, man, you made my day. What's your take on GlobalFoundries?
Well, look, I mean, right now the GlobalFoundries business is good. It typically is not a good business long term. I think it'll be fine. I would much prefer you to be in Lam Research, LRCX, which they have to buy in order to make a foundry work. And that stock is very, very cheap. Now we're going to John in Maryland. John.
How are you and your staff doing today?
My staff is unbelievable. They make me look good every single day, and they don't get enough appreciation. Thank you.
Good. I'm glad you're doing good and your staff. I'm a longtime viewer and a member of your investment club. You guys do a great job.
Oh, thank you. I'll tell Jeff Marks later tomorrow morning. Thank you.
Okay, my question, Jim. I'm a longtime holder of Morgan Stanley. I bought some early March, a little under 90. I've been following it all the way down. Thinking about buying some more here. Trades at a little over 10 times earnings. Looks like it's positioned well. What are your thoughts?
I couldn't agree more. We got a big position, as you know, for the Chapel Trust. We keep buying it down like you. Why? Well, tonight they announced a gigantic dividend boost, 11%. More importantly, they have a $20 billion buyback now. So they're buying everything they can. That's why I like Morgan Stanley and James Gorman. They are doing terrifically. And it is such an inexpensive stock. It's kind of ridiculous. How can that thing be at 9x earnings? Wow, that's just wrong. All right, for a rate hike cycle, I don't know. So far, so good. On Mad Money tonight, Global Wafers, a silicon wafer company that supplies companies like Intel, announced a multi-billion dollar factory today in Texas. I'm talking to Commerce Secretary Gina Raimondo to get a read on what the government is doing to help ease the chip crunch. And believe me, she helped get that plan here. Then FedEx has surprised Wall Street after earnings. So what was behind that strength? More importantly, could it continue? Breaking down the numbers. And is Belden, the network solutions company, a classic example of a broken stock? I don't know, man. I think this is a stock of a company that makes things, does stuff, gives you money, all the things we love. I'm finding out more about it with the CEO. So stay with Cramer.
Don't miss a second of Mad Money. Follow at Jim Cramer on Twitter. Have a question? Tweet Cramer. Hashtag Mad Tweets. Send Jim an email to madmoney@cnbc.com or give us a call at 1-800-743-CNBC. Miss something? Head to madmoney.cnbc.com.
Fact. Running a business is not getting easier on your wallet. With higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. Also a fact, smart businesses are reducing costs and headaches by graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required. Accessed from anywhere, you can cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. See how you'll profit with NetSuite, and then you can think of all the ways you could be spending the money you save. Company retreat in Malibu, anyone? By popular demand, NetSuite is offering a one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to NetSuite.com to start saving.
When you're hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging to connect with candidates faster. Plus, 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Mad Money. Just go to Indeed.com/Mad Money right now and support this show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Mad Money. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
We'll be right back.
Right now, we desperately need the government to work with big business to bolster domestic semiconductor manufacturing. We outsource too much of this to Taiwan, to South Korea, which is a major reason for our recent chip shortage. And when it comes to domestic semiconductor fabrication, I've got good news and bad news. The good news, today we learned that Global Wafers, a Taiwanese company, is building a multi-billion dollar silicon wafer factory in Texas. These wafers are the starting material for all advanced chip manufacturing. First one of these facilities in America in more than two decades. But then there's the bad news. That CHIPS Act that I like to talk about, that $52 billion piece of legislation that would support much more investment in domestic semiconductor manufacturing, it still hasn't passed Congress. The House passed one version, the Senate passed another, and they can't seem to reconcile the two. Just last week, Intel said it might have to scale back its plans to invest tens of billions in new domestic semiconductor plants if this bill doesn't pass. They told me they may do it in Europe. Now, earlier today, we had the chance to talk about all this with the real driver of this legislation. And it's Gina Raimondo. She is the U.S. Secretary of Commerce, who's fortunately taking point on the issue. Let's take a look. Madam Secretary, welcome back to Mad Money.
Hello, Jim. Good to be with you.
Well, let's start with the good news of today. This is a very big greenfield announcement about Global Wafers coming to Texas. Can you just give us that good news? Because it really means a lot of jobs and a lot of semis.
It's huge news. They're going to make a $5 billion investment in Texas to have a new greenfield facility to produce silicon. And of course, silicon is what we need to go into semiconductors. The reason this is so huge, Jim, is because it fills a hole in the United States supply chain of semiconductors. Right now, we don't make any of the silicon for the most sophisticated chips. And with the size of this new global wafer facility, they will produce enough silicon wafers to fulfill our entire U.S. domestic demand. So it's a huge announcement, thousands of jobs, as you say. It's a real vote of confidence in America and in the hope, in fact, that Congress will be passing the CHIPS Act.
Well, before we get to that, I also want to emphasize, and you can help us, this might have gone to Taiwan. They might have built it there, which is way too close to China, and we do not have enough capacity in our country.
Yes, that's exactly right. And I spent a long time on the phone with the CEO of this company, my team, with her team. That's absolutely right. They did not have to choose the United States. In fact, as recently as a few weeks ago, it wasn't obvious that they would choose the United States. They are currently based in Taiwan. Korea had big incentives on the table for them to operate in South Korea. We won this, Jim. This was competitive, and the United States won. And as I said, I think it's a vote of confidence in our country, in our economy, and in the Biden administration's commitment to revitalizing the chip industry. But I want to say this. This investment that they are making is contingent upon Congress passing the CHIPS Act. The CEO told me that herself, and they reiterated that today at this conference that we're at. So Congress really better get its job done and do so quickly.
Well, I'm getting worried. David Ignatius, who's a smart guy I've known for years, talking about how it's suddenly a Christmas tree bill that people have loaded it down with other things because they know it's going to favor it. New York Times, with funding stalled, chipmakers warn Congress the U.S. is lagging. We know that there are issues that are making so that a done deal's not getting done. What day, what week, what month will we see this done?
It has to be done before they go to August recess. I don't know how to say it any more plainly. This deal, this Global Wafers, will go away, I think, if Congress doesn't act.
Oh.
Intel has publicly said their operation in Ohio, their plans to put a new facility in Ohio is on pause, waiting to see if Congress gets this over the finish line. Micron, which is America's only memory chip manufacturer, has their plans on pause, waiting on Congress. So the stakes are high. Time's running out. Decisions are being made now. You know, Jim, here's the thing that we really need to realize. Semiconductor demand is through the roof globally. Semiconductor demand is going to double in the next 10 or 11 years. It takes a couple of years to get a new facility up and running, which means these companies have to make their decisions now. Global Wafers made the announcement today because they need to have the facility cement in the ground on the facility in November. So a long-winded way of saying I think they have until August 4th, which is their recess, and I hope they get it done.
Well, Pat Gelsinger recently told me at a dinner that Europe's ready. Europe wants it. Europe's doing everything they can to get Intel to do this. And why not? I mean, Europe is a terrific, hospitable place for Intel. There's no reason it has to be here unless we get this done.
There's no doubt about it. Europe is ready. Germany is aggressively targeting these companies with incentives. I was just with the president in South Korea. South Korea has the K-Chips Act. They are aggressively targeting companies. France, Israel, Spain, they are out there. They're ahead of us. These companies want to be in America, right? America is still the best place in the world to do business. Deep capital markets, good talent, lots of R&D. Their customers are here. They want to be here. But mark my words, Jim. If Labor Day comes and goes and this CHIPS Act isn't passed by Congress, these companies will not wait and they will expand in other countries. And those are once-in-a-generation investments, and this country will lose out.
Well, okay, so you have Senator McConnell. He can't be passive. He's got to be involved. Leader McCarthy, I know he likes this bill. Obviously, Nancy Pelosi definitely wants this. The president has said, listen, give me the bill. What is the problem? Who are the people who are getting in the way of this? So we really have to make it clear that they are hurting our country.
It's time, I think, for people to get much more practical. And I would say we, in the past few weeks, Congress is doing that. I should say Pelosi, Schumer, McConnell are engaging. And the past few weeks, I've spent time on this every single day. But everyone has to realize you're not going to get everything you want, right? We have to winnow this down to the essential items, get this passed, and move quickly. It's time to prioritize speed over getting everything in here that you want. And so I would just say to every member of Congress, the consequences to our national security are grave if we don't get this passed. And if you're not going to be able to get everything you want in this, it's time to move on, because we cannot wait.
But I am told there's trade titles, science funding, foreign relations committee provisions. Those all may be good, but they are being loaded into this bill, which makes it very unclear that this thing's going to pass. And if it's not done by August, as you said, I mean, it's going to get very, very difficult. Have they even scored it? I mean, this congressional budget office scored what this would cost?
They have for the CHIPS portion of it, which is, you know, the only appropriation.
Right.
But you're exactly right. There's a trade title. There's a foreign relations title. There's a lot of it, this in here. And the message has to be, you know, set a deadline. Whatever can be negotiated and agreed to by that deadline, fine. Other than that, drop it. Leave that to another day. And let's pass this as quickly as possible. Because if we don't, as I've already said, these companies are not going to wait. They cannot wait. They're going to have to build these facilities in other countries. Let me tell you this. Global Wafers, this one company we're talking about today. If this weren't to happen, let's say the United States stopped importing silicon wafers from other countries. Within 2 to 3 weeks, our entire domestic semiconductor supply chain would be shut down.
Oh.
Like, that is how vulnerable of a position we're in, which is my message to Congress. I mean, I talk to members of Congress every day, 7 days a week, anyone who will listen, saying, guys, you can't not do this. If you don't get the trade provision now, we'll deal with that later. If you can't get this foreign relations now, we can deal with that later. The CHIPS component cannot wait.
Well, we are cheering for you. We know how important. I saw the letter from 100 CEOs. I know that from the Defense Department, they need this very, very badly. Just keep working. We got to get this done. U.S. Secretary of Commerce Gina Raimondo, thank you so much for coming on Mad Money.
Thanks.
We'll return in a moment.
Coming up, special delivery. What's driving the recent FedEx rally? Kramer's got the goods. Next.
You seek the key, But first, you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
As we near the end of another rough month for the market, we're finding some real bright spots, but in the most unlikely places. Bright spots like FedEx, which has seen its stock surge 21% from its lows just a couple of weeks ago. Now, if you told me a month ago that FedEx would help lead us out of the depths of despair, well, I would have been extremely skeptical. Ever since it peaked almost exactly a year ago, this stock has become, let's call it, total dog. FedEx topped out at just under 305 in June of last year and spent most of the next 12 months working its way lower before finding a bottom under $200 this spring. For the last few months, it's been repeatedly bouncing off the 190s to 200 level. And it's easy to understand why this thing's been such a poor performer. FedEx has been struggling with snarled supply chains, rapidly rising labor costs. At the same time, the great reopening of the U.S. economy meant consumers pivoted away from e-commerce, causing the whole freight complex to get. Remember, they wanted to go out again. Plus, they were up against some very tough year-over-year comparisons because business was booming during the darkest days of the pandemic, before the bulk of the population got vaccinated. But this month, FedEx has made a number of announcements, including a widely praised quarter last Thursday, and now the stock has jumped from 201 to 240 in just 2 weeks. So how the heck did they turn things around? And more importantly, could the stock have more room to run? First, you got to understand where the company's coming from. Before COVID hit, FedEx was struggling. 2008 to 2019 were not good years to these guys. Suboptimal execution, the ill-fated acquisition of TNT Express in Europe, the Trump administration's trade war, repeated failures during the all-important holiday season. Then the pandemic came along, and the initial COVID crash, Wall Street realized that e-commerce could explode. Given that hundreds of millions of people were stuck at home, the only safe place to shop was the Internet, and somebody has to deliver those packages. By the end of 2020, FedEx was charging to near new all-time highs, and the stock kept running through the first half of 2021. But in September of last year, they turned in a weak quarter, blaming the Delta variant for causing major staffing difficulties. And there's a great piece of the conference call which shows it really was that. It disrupted their operations badly. Things only got worse when 2022 got rolling. Wall Street started worrying about an e-commerce slowdown, and then just a general economic slowdown once the Fed got really serious about raising interest rates aggressively. Doesn't help that FedEx took a huge hit from wage inflation. Yes, gasoline matters. When FedEx reported in March, their earnings came in weaker than expected, even as management reiterated their full-year forecast. And that's what fueled the last leg down. But even before the March quarter, we started hearing speculation that activist investors were circling, pushing for changes that would unlock value for shareholders. Then right after the quarter, founder and then CEO Fred Smith announced that he'd be passing the torch to a fellow by the name of Raj Subramaniam, who's always been on the conference call for the last couple of years. He's the chief operating officer who became the new CEO at the beginning of June. Smith came on the show the day after the succession announcement, and in what turned out to be a truly prophetic interview, he sounded very confident about FedEx's near future. Listen to this.
We're very confident in our strategies, and we're going to show a lot of those that we haven't really showcased in the last couple of years for very good competitive reasons at our investors and lenders meeting in late June.
Now, just, you know, this man's a hero of mine. He created this business. He's worked so hard. And it is so great that he said that because, you know what? Wow, was he right. Look, the stock initially jumped from the mid-220s to 240s on the succession news. Then we went into another hideous period for the stock market in April, May. It took the thing down to 190s. Again, FedEx repeatedly bounced off that 190-200 level, but it never seemed to be able to find traction. That is until a couple of weeks ago. And that's when we got a series of bullish announcements that Fred foretold us when he when he came on the show. Announcements have fundamentally changed the whole narrative. First, FedEx put together 53% dividend boost, raising the quarterly payout from 75 cents a share to $1.15 a share. Now, even after that dividend hike, we're still only talking about a roughly 2% yield, but nothing great. But this is the kind of move that's a major sign of confidence. We always tell you to pay attention to these things. Companies don't put through a 53% dividend boost when they're worried about making the next quarter. And while a 2% yield is not enough to be competitive with Treasuries here, it's also not nothing. Don't forget, this is a market that only values profitable companies that reward their shareholders with dividends and buybacks that sell at reasonable prices. We've been very right on that since November. At the same time, FedEx appointed two new independent directors to its board, part of a cooperation agreement with D.E. Shaw, quirky activist hedge fund. They also changed their executive compensation structure to be much more responsive to total shareholder return relative to the broader stock market. We like that. But the big thing here is that all of these announcements reflected a deeper change of FedEx. See, for years, this company had been spending money like crazy in order to integrate the European business they acquired from TNT Express. Didn't really work out that well, but maybe ready. And generally build out capacity to handle an increasingly e-commerce-dependent world. Now, though, it looks like FedEx is finally reaping the rewards from that spending. Management feels like they can put their cash to better use now, like that massive raise of the dividend. Which brings us to last Thursday when FedEx reported. If you only looked at the headline results, this was not a super impressive quarter. They posted a tiny top and bottom line miss. However, the guidance told a very different story. For their 2023 fiscal year, which started this month, FedEx forecast that they could earn $22.50 to $24.50 per share. The analysts were looking for less than $22. Looking at that forecast, FedEx is telling us they expect 9 to 19% earnings growth versus last fiscal year. Oh, that's huge. Like I told you last week, this is a tough market because the earnings estimates for so many companies are still too high. In some cases, way too high. Remember, we're always talking about that? But not FedEx. The estimates for FedEx turned out to be too low. This is a rare story where business is actually better than we thought. The next day, the analysts raised the price targets en masse. And we got a few more of these bumps today, perhaps because these analysts were taking Friday off. Now let's talk about the final piece of the puzzle. Let's talk about making money, something Fred Smith mentioned to us back in March. He said to expect good things from FedEx's next Investor Day, the event that comes Wednesday, first Investor Day in a decade. This will be new CEO Raj Subramaniam's first major chance to lay out his strategy. I am optimistic, and not just because this man's a genius, but because if FedEx has finished with its huge capital expenditures to build out new capacity, that means this can be a much more profitable company, more focused on returning capital to you, a shareholder. That big dividend boost 2 weeks ago might just be the tip of the iceberg, which is exactly what you want to see in this environment. The bottom line, you might think FedEx will be a helpless victim of high gas prices, a potential e-commerce plateau, Fed-mandated slowdown. That would be wrong. This company's taking control of its own destiny. And based on the new guidance, it's selling for just 10 times the earnings, 1.9% yield. I think you'd do a lot worse, especially with that big catalyst coming up in 2 days. Jacob in New Jersey. Jacob.
Hey, Jim. Thanks for all you and your staff do. I'd like to also give a special shout out to all the nurses at Overlook Hospital.
Oh, my, of course. They work so great and they so are so terrific. And I know a bunch of them. And I'm so glad you brought them up. And I salute them, too. What's up?
Yeah, my question is about a vacation ownership company or a timeshare, as most people refer to it as. Here's what I'd like to know. With increases in leisure demand the last year, but now negative headlines about increased talks about a recession possibility and higher interest rates. What is your opinion on the company Travel and Leisure, ticker symbol TNL?
Not a fan. I think, by the way, the Travel and Leisure, we're going to spend all our money and then we're going to be done spending and we're not going to travel. I think people are traveling beyond their means right now. And we want to pull back from anything travel. That's my goal right now. And thank you for those kind words about the nurses at Overlook. Robert in Illinois. Robert.
Hello, Mr. Kramer. Booyah. Blessings on your company and making money, and blessings on your families. I have a question for you, sir.
Sure.
There's a negotiation going on between CP Rail and Kansas City Southern. And Norfolk Southern and UP are trying to go to the Surface Transportation Board and contesting it. And I want to know what your insight is on this, sir.
Look, anybody who gets KSU, you want to own. KSU is just a fabulous, fabulous train. And I think that they are the best railroad that you can buy. So I hope that whoever gets it wins. And I think it's going to be, well, look, it's just a great piece of business. Look at this, guys. This is what you're looking for. Because you know why? Yes. FedEx is taking control of its own destiny, selling for just 10 times earnings, 1.9% yield. Nice catalyst coming up on Wednesday with an investor day. I like this one. Had much more Mad Money, including my exclusive with Belden. Could the company's recent transformation into a diversified network solutions company be the secret to being embraced by Wall Street? Because no one's thinking about it except for you and me. I'm checking in with the CEO. And after interviewing SEC Chairman Gary Gensler this morning on Squawk on the Street, you know what? I think we've got to start warning to those in the crypto and SPAC space. I'm going to reveal what I learned and all your calls rapid fire in tonight's edition of the Lightning Round. So stay with Cramer. You know us, we're always on the lookout for new ideas. Sometimes that means new companies. But in a market like this, frankly, I'd rather hunt for old companies that are being overlooked for one reason or another. Take Belden, BDC, for you home gamers. For many years, this company made cables, both copper and fiber. But recently, it's transformed itself, remarkably, frankly, to a more diversified, much more fast-growing network solutions play, both hardware and software. They've got exposure to industrial automation, smart buildings, broadband, 5G wireless, all themes you know we like. Most importantly, the company's doing very, very well. When Belden last reported in early May, they shut the lights out. But because the broader market's been so ugly, as you know, the stock's been stuck in the 50s for months. I think it's not getting the credit it deserves. Management just reaffirmed their full-year forecast 2 weeks ago, yet the stock sells for less than 10 times earnings. Makes no sense to me. But don't take it from me. Let's check in with Roel Vestjens. He's the president and CEO of Belden to get a better sense of where his company's headed. Mr. Vestjens, welcome to Mad Money.
Thank you. Appreciate the opportunity.
Okay, so Roel, I've got to tell you. When I was first pitched Belden, I said, I don't want that copper and wire company. Yeah. What do they have? Yeah. I think, like many, I misjudged. I misjudged what you're doing. I misjudged what you're doing, broadband. Fantastic. Industrial automation. Perhaps the fastest grower in industrial automation of all the companies I follow. Mm-hmm. How are you able to transform things like this?
Well, I think that misperception is part of the problem. So we used to be 100% a cable company. Now cable is about 35% of our revenues. And over the last 15, 16 years, we dramatically changed the portfolio. So we focused on the markets that we want to play in. And now we only play in industrial automation, smart buildings, as we call it, and broadband and 5G. And within those markets, we're able to provide complete solutions to our customers. And I don't think that message has come across yet.
Well, do you want to be number one in each? Because I saw you cybersecurity. No. Could be number one?
Of course we could. Yeah.
What you decide?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, because I'm trying to figure out like what you decide to be passionate about and what you feel you can't make money in.
Well, we feel that within industrial automation, for example, which is 54% of Belden's revenues, right, we're able to provide complete networking and connectivity solutions, which include launching it in a secure environment.
Okay.
So, and we previously weren't. Right. So that's one. Two is, I actually think this environment of increased rates is actually beneficial for us.
Explain that to me, because most people say, no, you're an industrial company.
Because we provide digitization. So think about machine builders, for example, like, for example, a Coca-Cola or any type of company that has operates large machines. As opposed to making capital investments for future expansion, they're now more likely to optimize the current assets and make sure the current assets create a higher productivity. And that's what we do.
All right. Now, broadband 5G, I've had many companies on there in broadband 5G. It seems crowded to me, but you're growing 16%. How is that possible?
Yeah, we have a very high innovation rate within that segment. In that business alone, I think we have 700, 800 patents. We have very high customer intimacy, so we work with all the major broadband providers in the United States, but more and more internationally as well. And we're able to provide solutions together with them in our lab.
Now, you are looking, I don't know why you put this out, because we could be in a recession, for $8 by 2025. You must be very confident about secular growth here, because if it is cyclical, that could be derailed.
Well, the way that we get to the $8, appreciate you bringing that up, $8 EPS by 2025.
It's a nice goal.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, you got to have a good goal.
Yeah,
so
you do.
That implies 12% compounded annual growth rate in EPS. That's what we've done over the last 3 years. So including the dip in 2020, and if we take the midpoint of our guidance that we've issued and reaffirmed 2 weeks ago, that's 12% over 3 years, every year. So it's maintaining the path that we're on.
Now, smart buildings. Sometimes I feel that is a congested group. For instance, Honeywell tells me they're in smart buildings. And then you also have companies like Zebra that do smart buildings work. What this thing, you know, Honeywell's a huge company. Mm-hmm. How do you go up against Honeywell?
Well, we operate in slightly different spaces.
Okay.
But we used to play a lot in commercial real estate, and commercial real estate is still part of the portfolio. But we've reallocated resources over the last 3 years to mainly healthcare facilities and data centers.
Okay, they're not in healthcare. Now, one last thing that I need to know about is that, you know, when you've got analysts who literally are saying that, look, you're ignoring higher rates, you're ignoring the Fed, you're ignoring China, you're ignoring Europe. What do you say to them?
Well, I say we focus on the things that we can control, and we're very bullish about the secular market drivers. And like I said, I actually think this tightening that we're in, the increased rates, is good for us. It reinforces the secular drivers that that we play in.
Well, will some of the bigger firms then follow you? Because you've got a much more compelling story than a lot of the industrials who come through here.
Yeah, we feel good about our positioning. We feel good about this digitization trend that we have launched. We launched a complete new software program 2 weeks ago on June 15th. That make assets more productive. And I think that's exactly what our customers are looking for right
now. Well, you make things and do stuff at a profit and sell at a reasonable price and return some capital. And that is the solution for what we're looking for in this market. That is Roel Vestjens. He's the president CEO of Belden BDC. Guys, if you remember Belden in the old days, you got it wrong. I know I got it wrong. This is the new Belden. Mad Money's back after the break.
Stick around.
May I make a suggestion? I would stay with him.
The Lightning Round is coming up next.
It is time. It's time for the Lightning Round. That's where it goes. One of the saviors said, "All right, play this out." And then the Lightning Round is over. Are you ready, Ski? That time the Lightning Round comes. I start with Mike California. Mike.
Booyah, Kramer.
Booyah, Mike.
Hey, my question is about a stock that was, it surged early and then it's back down to a good level. Ticker symbol UPST, Upstart.
You know, look, I want to see their balance sheet a little cleaned up and then I can go back to start liking them again. I didn't want to see any actual interest rate risk on their balance sheet. And right now they have some. Mark in Michigan, Mark. Mark?
Yes, I've been watching you since your Kudlow and Kramer days.
Holy cow. That's a long, long time ago. Thank you. What's up?
Yes, I'm interested in WIRE. Is it a good 5G investment for the next 10 years?
No, it's very funny because that was a company I was trying to think of when we had Belden on tonight, which is a rival, but not anymore. You should be looking at Belden. Let's go to Craig in Florida. Craig.
From South Florida, big booyah to you.
Nice, nice.
Hey, I use this device at work and I really like it. Silk Road Medical, symbol of silk.
Well, could be good, but we're not recommending any stocks of companies that are not making money right now. It's too risky a time to do that. I'm sure I'm going to end up passing on some great companies by that, but you have to have discipline going to PT in Texas. PT.
Hey, Big Jim, you are the Sam Bankman of fried green tomatoes, if you know what I mean, partner.
Well, I guess I'll take that. What the hell? I mean, my hair used to look like
his. Well,
I
saw you with your Crocs in your garden. Just thought I'd give you a little shout-out.
My daughter loves the Crocs.
On SIVB, Silicon Valley Bank Corp.
You're wild, man. You know, I think it's a very inexpensive stock. But after what I saw Morgan Stanley do today with that buyback and the dividend boost, let's just stick with Morgan Stanley, okay? Let's just stick with it. I need to go to Charles in South Carolina. Charles.
Hey, Jim. Great to talk to you.
Oh,
hey,
same, Charles.
Got a little value semiconductor. Get your opinion on. I know you're an AMD, Nvidia guy, but this one's got a 6.5 yield, single digit P, 50% earnings growth, running at 100% capacity. What do you think about UMC, United Microelectronics? Thank you.
Okay, that one. Look, it's a very inexpensive. It's a great spec. How about this? Let's leave it as a great spec and move on. Andy in Colorado. Andy.
Hey, Jim, thanks for taking the call.
Of course.
Hey, I've got a question for you about Bank of America.
Well, I thought Bank of America could have boosted its dividend a little bit more tonight. Makes me feel like that it's better to go after Morgan Stanley. I think that's a better buy. And it's just a fact of life. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the conclusion of the Lightning Round.
The Lightning Round is sponsored by TD Ameritrade. Coming up, when does innovation turn into chaos? Cramer on the collision between crypto and the SEC. Next.
Jim Cramer, you're one of my heroes.
I look forward to your show every weeknight.
Thank you so much for helping beginning investors like me.
When you talk about the market, I just believe that you're spot on.
Oh, I love it. Thank you so much. Every night we watch you, I have learned and earned.
There's a certain naive smugness about the people who promote crypto or SPACs that I quite frankly find unnerving. Don't get me wrong, I love innovation, applaud anyone who truly believes they got something that can make you and me money. But whether we're talking crypto evangelists or SPAC sponsors, these people don't seem to understand that there's something called the Securities and Exchange Commission, run by Gary Gensler. And if you don't comply with the regulations, he will come after you. When we interviewed Commissioner Gensler this morning on Squawk on the Street, he reminded us that ensuring disclosure is the most important part of the SEC's job. The commission isn't trying to stop new things. It's trying to make sure that investors know what they're getting into. Unfortunately, there are an awful lot of companies that don't want to see, who really don't seem to want you to know what they're up to. It's like they think disclosure is a dirty word. For example, there are 400-odd special-purpose acquisition companies that are in search of businesses to buy. And I think the commissioner is as rankled as I am by what these SPACs are up to. SPACs are, in essence, blank check companies. But aren't we all taught from a young age not to give anyone a blank check? Worse, when these SPACs find a company to merge with, the puffed-up nature of the projections is atrocious. I told Chairman Gensler about when I brought the Street.com public back in 1999. We wanted to include all kinds of positive stuff in the prospectus, but the SEC shot those points down one by one by one. While I always respected the commission as a trader, on the corporate finance side, the rigor kind of blew me away. I'm glad they're finally getting serious about these SPACs, which are basically a way for startups to come public while avoiding the regulatory scrutiny that comes with an IPO. The whole SPAC movement burgeoned under Chairman Gensler and his immediate predecessor. I think it's finally run its course after losing people fortunes. Which brings me to crypto. It's very clear that the crypto promoters simply don't understand the role of the SEC. They behave like there are no rules, but that's not true. Right now, Chairman Gensler is studying the situation. Some would say he's awfully late, given how long crypto has dominated the speculative landscape. As Gensler said, if you buy it with this expectation it's going to go up, that's a security, which means he's going to regulate it. I want you to listen to what he said this morning. It's really important.
Right now, you have hundreds, if not thousands, of these crypto tokens that have the basic attributes of raising money from the public, and having a group of entrepreneurs that you might have on your show saying, come hither, we've got a good idea for you. And that's okay in America if you comply with the laws, and we've got, unfortunately, a lot of projects that are non-compliant.
I think the crypto promoters badly misinterpreted Gensler's studious approach for distrust, or maybe a kind of benign regulatory neglect. Crypto-oriented companies like Coinbase seem to feel there's no lash coming from the SEC for their aggressive promotion, and they're nowhere near the worst actors. I was hoping Gensler would push for the $66 billion Tether, the so-called stable coin that's meant to be pegged to the dollar, to finally show us its hand, because this thing's backed by lots of commercial paper that we know nothing about. I didn't get that. But what I did get is a bit of a warning to the cottage industry of people who exist to get new investors into crypto. The SEC's had enough. They don't want more people losing money. So, especially in something they don't understand. These crypto purveyors seem to believe that they can get away with anything, and the SEC's toothless. But the more havoc they wreak, the more they'll feel the lash of the commission that makes the rules that they'll eventually have to live by. I like to say this always, bull market summer. I promise I'll find it just for you right here on Mad Money. I'm Jim Cramer. See you tomorrow. The news with Shepard Smith starts now.
At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate, pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.